Welcome to a new edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a much younger alumni from my college, Hans Raj, who's here with me. Gautam Ved, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ashish.
Gautam is an entrepreneur. He's a co-founder of Coast to Coast Designs. He started his life as a plywood, with a plywood manufacturing plant, and is now in veneer. So, Gautam, what made you start on an entrepreneurial journey straight out of college?
So, you know, I'm born and brought up in Calcutta. So in class 11th, we moved to Delhi. My father joined as an executive director with the Jindal Group. Mm-hmm. So I met my business partner then in the school, who's from Assam.
Okay.
So, you know, they were just out of a conversation in the final year of college. He said, we are setting up a new plywood manufacturing plant. So I said, you know, if you don't mind, I want to start business. How about I join as a partner? So he said, okay, it's a new thing. And then, you know, I was also thinking, you know, either to go abroad to study or start. Mm. So that time, you know, this trend was going on that first you work for 5 years and then you do your MBA. It never happened.
Okay.
But this is how.
Okay. And why did you decide to work with wood?
No, as I told you that my business partner, their family was in the wood.
Okay.
So that time, it was a growing business where people were making good money. Mm. So as a, you know, straight out of college, you thought it's perfect. You know, somebody, the family knows about this business and it's a growing business.
Okay.
And into manufacturing.
Okay. So, you know, based on your profile, you have four businesses. You're a reseller of wood veneer. You're a component manufacturer for furniture brands. You have a brand called Drew Casa, which is bespoke solutions for residences. And then you do joint ventures with Europeans.
Yeah, so basically, you know, we started with the plywood manufacturing plant.
Okay.
And
you set up your own plant?
Yeah. Okay. In 1998.
Okay. And where did you set up this plant?
This is in Sonipat.
Okay.
So we started, but there we were, me, my business partner and his brother. Mm. So in the year 2000-2001, you know, there was some kind of separation. Mm. So they, my business partner's brother, opted for the plywood manufacturing business. Mm. And we said, okay, we'll get into trading. Mm. So we decided to, you know, go to Europe to one of these exhibitions, Interzoom, in Germany, to see, you know, what. So we realized, you know, that the decorative veneer in India was traditionally a teak consuming market. Mm. So whatever veneer mostly was sold was teak. There were few people.
So before we get any further, what is veneer?
So veneer, you know, is the sliced part of the wood,
okay,
which is sliced in different thicknesses starting from 0.5 mm. And it's a decorative top surface. So in India, when people say veneer, they think it's a 4 mm veneered plywood.
Okay.
But whereas veneer is the top layer of that plywood.
I see. So it is something which you apply on top of, say furniture or doors.
You buy that 4 mm veneered plywood and then it gets applied, which is the traditional way of using it.
Okay.
So when we went to Europe, we realized that, you know, there are more than 200 types of veneer surfaces which is available in different species of wood. And there were a few people already manufacturing in India, but they were buying for self-consumption.
Okay.
So it struck me and my partner, you know, why not import and stock it and help other people start manufacturing this product. So we went to Europe, we imported some stock, and then we went to each and every factory and trying to tell them that, okay, we will supply you veneer and also we will help you sell that veneer, because since we had started our business with plywood manufacturing, we knew a lot of dealers and distributors throughout the India. So this is how we started.
Okay. So initially, and veneer, you are still importing or you manufacture in India also?
Now, just 4 months back, we have set up a manufacturing plant.
Okay. 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 Wonderful. And then you know, you speak about component manufacture.
What happened is when we started traveling Europe, we realized that India is only one of the few countries which buys a 4mm veneered plywood and then pastes it on top of a substrate of, which can be 18mm. But whereas worldwide, furniture people buy only the raw veneer and press it themselves. But then we realized most of the furniture people don't have the pressing facility. So we started this facility where the veneer what we import, we make components out of that and sell it to furniture manufacturers.
So if you look at furniture, I mean, you know, typically most of us in our homes have used, in the old days was Burma teak, then it became, I don't know much about wood, but became regular wood. Then I think plywood started getting used. And at some stage, veneer is now applied on top of that. And now there is the entry of IKEA.
Yes.
Which is, I think, compressed board, if I, or yeah, something.
Pre-laminated.
So what is happening in this business? How is it changing?
What is happening is wood started from wood. But in Europe, people understood that, you know, what people really want is the top surface. Whereas solid wood contracts and expands with the change of weather. So it got into engineered wood, which is a plywood.
Okay.
And plywood with the top of the veneer. So it looks like a solid wood, but it is engineered, doesn't expand, doesn't contract. So then IKEA came in with the digital printing technology. So basically, they print paper with different grains of wood, which is already ready to cut, and it's a cheaper look and feel is same, but it's exactly how marble and tile. You know?
Of course, IKEA doesn't last very long.
And it's not natural.
Yeah.
In the sense, it will never have the warmth which a real wood will have.
That's true. I remember buying my first IKEA in 1989. When we have moved to Singapore, and in the last about 4 or 5 years, and it just falls apart.
Yeah, but they charge you also that.
I agree. So when you talk of components for furniture, what does it mean? So
basically, say for example, if you're a wardrobe manufacturer, for you a component can be a shutter,
okay,
or a carcass of the wardrobe. Whereas if somebody is a furniture manufacturer, it could be a tabletop. So we do the veneering part and supply them because we understand that for a smaller size or mid-size factory, doesn't work well to invest in so much machinery and also the knowledge.
And the veneers come in multiple designs.
Yeah, more than 200 species of wood.
So how do you ensure standardization?
So basically, it's exactly like a marble business, that natural defects, some defects are categorized as A, B or C. So it's with, experience and different markets have different grading.
I understand. Okay. And then your third business is Drukasa, which is bespoke solutions.
Drukasa basically,
is a Drukasa is a Spanish word, Portuguese
Dru
word.
Means in Sanskrit wood.
I see.
And casa in Spanish means home. So wood home.
Okay, so that's a Spanish Sanskrit word.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, when we started supplying components to people, we realized that everybody wants to do mostly furniture or wardrobe or kitchens. Still, majority of the mill work is done by carpenters. So we thought, why not set up a unit where we do the millwork. So initially it started as supplying it to furniture manufacturers. But since last 2 years, we started our own B2C branding.
Okay. And this goes into
homes. We are catering mostly homes.
Okay.
But it can go into anywhere where a carpenter works.
So which means when you say B2C, you have showrooms where people can go and have a look?
We have one showroom. But basically, it's end to end. So our team takes the measurement and also takes care of the installation. So basically, we work through interior designers who refer us. They give the design. We do a prototype. So it's all the work what the carpenter used to do, but prefabricated.
I see.
So the carpenter basically just works in your house to install.
Mm.
Otherwise, there is no work for either.
So there must be a big market with all the condominiums now. Isn't it?
The market is very, very big.
Mm.
In fact, you know, in US,
mm.
2017-18 mill work was $5.2 billion. So India, I assume, would be much bigger. But in India, you cannot put a figure to it because such a big unorganized market
mm.
that nobody has figures.
And then how do you handle the Indian mind of customization? Everybody wants something different.
So that's where, you know, which works in our favor. Because if it gets standardized, people like IKEA will kill it.
Okay. So you're offering standardization with customization.
Mostly customization with little bit of standardization.
Okay.
That's because we realize, you know, people in India want to spend money. They want it their way.
Mm. Correct.
So, and you know, with the population our size, even 1% of the market mm. wants this. The market demand is huge.
Yeah, because you know, all of us in India, we are so proud of our homes.
Yeah.
And we all like
and
to say,
everybody has so
I did
much time.
It. And people have time.
That's what amazes me.
Mm.
That some of the people we work are big names in the industry,
mm.
in their own field.
Mm.
But when it comes to their home, they have so much time.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we are all so conscious of the fact that my home has to be unique.
And WhatsApp doesn't help.
And WhatsApp doesn't help. I agree with you. And then, Gautam, your fourth business, which was interesting because you said it's joint ventures with Europeans.
So basically,
how does this work?
You know, what we realize in Indian furniture industry is going very, very fast. And attending few exhibitions, we realize people are only concentrating on the design part of it. Whereas what they should be concentrating is what is used to make that furniture.
Okay.
So with our access with the international market, we realize that most of the Indians cannot achieve
mm.
what a European manufacturer achieves is because of the raw material. So we have started tying up with big manufacturers of raw material for the furniture industry and representing them in India
okay.
as distributors.
Okay. So one more question on wood. I mean, you know, the whole world is now talking about protecting trees and, you know, green economy, etc., sustainability. How is that going to impact the entire business of wood? Because wood is the most important ingredient
you know,
for building.
People are talking, but they're not also talking about this, that most of the wood now coming into India
mm-hmm.
is from sustainable forest.
Okay.
And FSC certified and all these certification which is going around.
Mm.
So what happens is they mark you a certain area where you can cut. So it's not that, you know, people are just cutting trees and
mm.
wood is in.
And do we have such sustainable forests in India also?
No.
No. So there is no area where the government
Unfortunately,
says.
Unfortunately, you know, Indian government never thought about replantation or sustainability.
Mm.
So India, being such a big country, 99% of the wood is still being imported.
See. And which are some of the big countries where this is
happening? Biggest exporter is America.
Okay.
Europe and America are the biggest.
Mm.
And also with their stronghold, the design worldwide, their wood species grown in their country are specified the most worldwide.
I see.
Like the American walnuts.
Yeah. And the old thing of Burma teak has disappeared almost completely.
Surprisingly, still 50% market is governed by Burma.
Really?
Still.
And you're still getting teak from Burma?
Oh. Now they've put a ban on transportation of logs,
mm.
but you can process it there and bring it. But it's on a dying course
mm.
because now the prices have become very, very steep and
mm.
it won't be viable. But you know how Indians are with their home.
Mm.
Somebody will just say, no, I still want Burma tea.
Mm. 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 I agree. So in this whole business, you're running four different businesses.
And a fifth one.
And a fifth
we
one
just
is?
Added 3 months back.
Which one is this?
So we set up a factory to slice our own veneers.
Oh, okay.
And with that, now we have set up another small unit doing bleach and dye in a veneer.
Mm.
So how you dye a textile, there are two Italian companies which are doing it. Now we'll be the first company in India to bleach and dye.
You know, what an amazing learning for me talking to you, because I had no idea.
This exists. Yeah.
There's so much complexity in everything that goes into our homes. That's amazing. As you were building these businesses, on a national basis, what were some of your key challenges?
The biggest challenge is the lack of knowledge.
Amongst the customer?
Among the customer, among the end users. The problem is, they don't want to understand. They know that, they think that they know. That's one challenge. And the other is getting people who are skilled to do these jobs. Mm. For example, in the vertical where we do the millwork, so when you hire a carpenter, he's not ready to unlearn and learn to work on a machine. He will tell you that I've been doing this for 25 years, so you don't have to teach me. So it never becomes a process. It still becomes dependent on a certain human being. That's one of the biggest challenges we're facing, scaling up this part of the business.
Okay. And is funding easily available? Because this must be capital intense, working capital
intense. It is capital intense, but till date we have not gone for any funding other than bank loans.
Okay. That's very interesting. So now, Gautam, moving to another part of our show, which is some of your learnings as an entrepreneur. I speak to so many people, and some people say that it's good to have a partner. Some people say it's good to go alone. You've had a partner from the very beginning.
Yeah, from day one. Yeah.
From day one. What are your thoughts?
I always feel, if you can find somebody who can complement your skill level, then it's a perfect synergy between two people. The problem arises that at an early stage, if you don't draw lines as to what one does, and it's like, any partnership, can be a marriage, can be a business partnership. To be honest, I have been lucky to find a partner and stay with the same partner for so long, where we complement each other and we have grown together.
And, one other challenge that a lot of entrepreneurs face is, when they start businesses, they make a lot of mistakes. You started your plywood business. After that, you built 5 new businesses.
Yeah, but
what is your experience in making mistakes? And you're an investor, you told me, in several companies.
No, but it's good to make mistakes.
Right.
Because if you fall early in your path, you know how to take failure.
Correct.
Because failures are bound to come. And it just prepares you better. Because, someone who's not had a failure and you have it at a later stage, it's very difficult to...
Correct. But based on your experience of your own enterprises and all the places you invest, what are the kind of mistakes a lot of startups make?
Nowadays, I think the biggest mistake startups are making is going for the valuation without concentrating on the core business. They read too much.
Yeah.
And at a very early stage, they start counting their eggs before they even hatch.
How many zeros are there? Yeah. So you create value before valuation.
I personally feel, create a business. Value will come. But if you start creating value and not a business, it's bound to fall. It's like a musical chair. Wherever the music stops, that guy will have
it. That is true. And, now wearing your hat as an investor, we've generally seen 9 out of 10 startups don't make it.
Yeah.
And yet, as Indians, we have always been told, probably because we are 1.3 billion, that first time, somehow or the other get ahead. Winning is all that matters. And I often tell people that startup entrepreneurs have not been told how important it is to learn that if you fail, it does not matter.
The thing is, this is also very new to our country, the startup thing. So there is no history which you can relate to. So what people are relating is only to the successes, the Jeff Bezos and the Alibaba. But they don't realize that, in the end, if you don't build a core business where you know what's happening and you're passionate about it. So half the people, they quit job and they're starting something just to make a value, sell it off. It's like, if you are already starting a business with a mindset that you want to sell it off,
it
how can't. Much?
It cannot work.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, we've had this one big case of an entrepreneur who built such a big coffee chain and then took an extreme step. I said that, you know, people must know and understand that if you fail, it's not a problem.
Yeah, that's what I told you, that it's very important that early on in your life you fail.
Yeah.
So that you know how it feels like.
Mm.
Because otherwise, it would happen something what happened recently.
Mm.
That with the pressure, and you don't know how to process it.
Mm. That is true.
And the worry is the next generation.
Mm.
Because when we were growing up, our parents never bothered so much on winning.
Mm.
But if you see our kids growing up, only thing which matters to us as parents is win.
Mm-hmm.
So they are under so much stress and they live in this digital world, you know, where they interact less with people, the real people, you know. I don't know.
That's true. I mean, it's a philosophical discussion, but I've often said that because we are such a large country, all that we are taught is somehow get first. Which is, and you see that manifesting itself at traffic lights. Somehow or the other must get my car in front.
Everywhere.
You see it at movie theaters. You see it in this, you know,
airline,
immigration, everywhere. I agree with you. So moving on, you know, a little more into our chat. Some questions about you personally. You became an entrepreneur very early in life, and you had successful businesses.
And some what, early failures too.
And of course, failures, of course. But what is the secret of all the success? Is it just hard work?
No, I think it's honesty and hard work. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are honest to your job and you work dedicatedly, I think in a country like India, you cannot fail.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's so much to happen in a country like ours,
mm-hmm.
that there's room for everybody. Moreover, I think we were lucky. As a company, we did the right transition at the right time.
Mm. And so, therefore kept on exploring
kept on,
the market.
Yeah. And I think traveling helped a lot. Because for the business, I travel a lot. So when you travel, you know, you see what the developed country did right. So as an entrepreneur, you start feeling, okay, if I do this in my country, it will work, which works.
Mm. And of course, you know, you are quite an expert on Europe now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought of going to South America, which has also got a very large wood business?
I go every year once.
Oh, you are? Okay. And do you import from there
yeah.
also? I see. Very interesting. And do you have any superstitions?
Yes and no.
Oh.
No.
What kind of superstitions?
Well, like I wear this ring.
Uh-huh.
So, it's a superstition. But I'm not like really, really superstitious. But yeah. Something gets stuck in your head.
Mm.
And early on, I always want to be a cricketer.
Mm.
So when you're in any sport, you pick up that superstition.
Right.
Early in your
right.
career that, you know, you do this, this will happen.
Right. Right. Very interesting. Very interesting. So question I ask all my guests. What is your biggest learning from your biggest failure?
Biggest learning from your biggest failure is, you know, never do something which you don't have control of
okay.
or knowledge of, you know. At an early, I ventured into a .com,
mm-hmm.
started my own thing called IndiaPlywood.com. Mm-hmm. But then I realized, you know, a subject which you don't know,
mm-hmm.
technology,
mm-hmm.
you're bound to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Which a lot of people do make mistakes, you
yeah.
know. Just looking at others, you think, okay, if he can do it,
mm-hmm.
I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important because it's a very competitive world.
Mm.
If you don't have in-depth knowledge of what you're doing, you are bound to fail.
Yeah. So what you're saying is domain knowledge is very
yeah,
important.
Domain knowledge is very important.
You know, after all your entrepreneurial journey, there are about 15,000, 18,000 people who watch our interview every day. Every day?
Oh.
And we have a very large viewership. And we find that a lot of them are startup entrepreneurs. Do you have any advice for someone who's starting his journey like you did 20 years ago?
advice is, you know, I was lucky. I started when it was not so competitive and there was less technology. Mm-hmm. Today, you need to be planned in the right way. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a dirty world out there, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. And be ready for failures. Okay. Don't be afraid of failing.
Correct. And you already said, work honestly.
That's good. That's, you know, the basics, which mm-hmm. I think in India, still people don't understand.
Correct. So one last question. After this journey, and you've got a long journey ahead, do you have any regrets?
I have regrets. Means I always think that I should have started 2 years later and done my MBA.
Okay.
That time, which I thought I would do later. But with this fast pace business, you know, that's one of my only regrets. Mm. Otherwise, God's been kind.
Gautam, thank you very much. You've been an amazing guest. You've spoken with a lot of honesty and transparency. And I'm sure our listeners will really enjoy hearing you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.